Ghost Beast!
Ghost Beast.
Ghost Beast!
A horror podcast. I'm Todd.
I'm Becca.
And we're going to watch every horror movie ever made. So hang out with us for a spoiler-free review and content warning, followed by our full thoughts. Because today, we watched Sinners from 2025. Of course, directed by Ryan Coogler, who did Black Panther and Creed, a few other things. But this is his first horror movie. Love to see it. This is a big one. Had a lot of hype going into it. And it's funny because I feel like the hype kind of happened out of nowhere. Because I remember seeing the trailer a while ago and thought it looked really cool, but no one was really talking about it until like the week before. And then it was suddenly like, oh, this is the best movie of the year. And it just got like really insane. And that's always something that makes me nervous, because we've talked on here before how expectations can really mess with you. I remember even in the theater, I was like reading stuff when we were waiting for it to start, where I was like, I don't want to be reading this shit.
Yeah. Why were you reading it?
Because we were just sitting there waiting for it to start. Like, I saw that it got an A on CinemaScore and how that's like the first horror movie to get that since Aliens. Like, stuff like that right before the movie. It's like, I don't need this, because I feel like it's setting me up to be disappointed.
Yeah.
But the movie was not disappointing at all. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I think I got like everything I wanted out of it, basically, which is so rare. But if you somehow don't know, I mean, it's a vampire movie. That's not a spoiler. They really show that in the trailer. But it takes place in the 1930s in Mississippi. So it deals a lot with the culture at the time. And there's a big focus on the love of music. But it kind of winds up being about, spoiler-free way of putting it.
I mean, this is kind of like in your favorite genre of horror film, where it's like an isolated story.
Yes, that's true.
So,
with some monsters.
Yes.
Not slimy. that makes no sense if you didn't listen to our 100th episode.
Yeah.
But I guess I'd describe it as just it's a movie that is about a lot of things that the Black community was dealing with in 1930s Mississippi. Touches on sharecropping and Jim Crow, which are both after effects of slavery, but also on the musical culture and the desire to just leave all this and find something more in the world, and how that can, it's kind of like the dark side of that. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, I think so.
And that's where a lot of the horror comes into it, because the best horror is able to provide commentary on real life issues. And I think that stuff is interwoven into this movie in some like amazing ways. It doesn't feel like it's beating you over the head with it, but the ideas are like right there. And it's powerful. So we had a good time seeing this in theaters, did our usual thing, going to the mall way too early to get Popeyes and boba. But I remember, you know, usually fucking outlaws over here will bring that stuff into the theater with us. But I was looking at the seats and it was like, oh, this theater is kind of filling up. Like, we went at 12:15 noon and yeah, it was packed.
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe we can't just pull out like boxes of chicken in the middle of the theater.
I mean, we still did. Kind of did.
But it was just like the leftovers. So, I mean, you can feel like the excitement and the hype for this immediately. Because usually when we go that time, we go early like that because there's nobody there.
Yeah.
And we can just be delinquents. But it still is fun. Like, we saw it in XD and everything. I've read a lot about how they shot this for IMAX and stuff. Mm. And I think like that comes through and is really effective. This is definitely something that's worth seeing on the big screen. And something that stood out right away, like even when we were in the trailers, is that there are a lot of movies coming out now that, like, it's nothing new to be talking about stuff like this, like racial issues and stuff. But I feel like directors are getting more confident to like really just punch you in the face with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like nothing subtle about it. Like, they have some real teeth behind the message. And we talked about even Wicked, like with its commentary on like CRT and stuff. It was like very in your face.
CRT? Oh, is that? I'm so like far removed. I haven't even heard that in so long.
I know.
I think now the maggots are calling it DEI. They just find new words to say that they're racist.
CRT, DEI, same fucking fight, basically. But yeah, in the trailers, I mean, we saw a trailer for Him, which I had heard of, and that looked fucking cool. That's the one that Jordan Peele produced.
That blew me away. What was crazy is there was so many. I feel like it was like back to back.
No, that was what I was going to say. Yeah. The other one was
Final Destination Bloodlines. Well,
that's not in the same category, but yes.
Oh, no, I mean, like, I yeah, think it was a good trailer. Yeah. It was a good trailer. I mean, especially since we've just recently rewatched them. I thought it was a great trailer.
It looks like it's going to capture the spirit. We still have two more to watch before we get there. Well, it's
not like, I feel like these are probably different than those. The new one is probably.
It looks like it's going more back to like the original. But there was also that movie, One Battle After Another, which I don't know much about it. That's the one directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. It also looked like something really powerful. And then, of course, we get The Accountant, too, which I don't know who that's for. I didn't even know
there was a first one. So there was way too much marketing for that movie. It was like the whole time it was like they're splicing it in. Yeah,
that one really stood out among like all the others because that feels like it is the white male incel fantasy. You know, like it's just in every way. Because one minute it's him like at a bar picking someone up. And then suddenly they're like in the Middle East shooting people. Like
shooting guns.
I don't know what those movies are about.
I don't know. It just seemed like it really felt like an AI generated script for what a man would want to see, I guess.
I think I'm good on those. But Sinners. Yeah, I mean, right from the beginning when it started, I think like what people should be prepared for with this movie is that like even though it is a really good vampire movie that gets very gory and gruesome and has a lot of action. The early parts of the movie, it is really like a historical drama.
Yeah.
And I was completely captivated by that stuff. It's so well done. And I really, the thing that stood out to me was how well they contextualize all the history where it's like, they're not spelling things out for you and like teaching you what life was like. It's just, you're there.
Yeah, and you're experiencing it with the characters.
Yes. Yeah. And it's handled so well because even the story behind Michael B. Jordan's character, who plays twins, which I also didn't know. I didn't know that either. I was trying to stay in the dark.
Same here.
I think the trailer really doesn't prepare you for like how much this movie is doing.
Yeah.
Because honestly, I'm not like a big vampire person. It's one of those things where I just feel like there's room to do interesting stuff with it, but they tend to be, there's so many boring ones, you know? So the trailer, just the fact that like, okay, it's a vampire movie in Mississippi. Honestly, Ryan Coogler was the only reason I was like, okay, I really want to give this a shot though. And it really, that trailer just doesn't set you up for everything it's doing. Cause yeah, all the stuff in the beginning, even before they introduce vampires, I was like, I could just watch it this fucking movie. Like it's so good. Because, Michael B. Jordan plays Smoke and Stack. Those are the characters. It's cool as fuck, man. Yeah. And, like, it really is one of those things where, like, they try to differentiate between the two with, like, how they dress. Like, one is red, one is blue. It's very much like an NES action game where you pick your character. But it's like you don't even need that because they have different personalities. And he gets that across really well.
I thought the way, I mean, look, I am not an actor, so I don't know all the ins and outs there. But being able to play two different characters that look the same and your acting is so good that it doesn't even matter if they're wearing red or blue. Like he's switching between the two so perfectly.
Well, they really do have different personalities and even just like the mannerisms and stuff are different. Just so, so well done. And yeah, it's like their whole story, their characters feel so rich and like they've lived such a crazy life and they don't like go super deep into it. They just kind of give you basic ideas that like they left to go to Chicago. They were involved with gangs up there. They fought in World War One. It's like they just drop these little ideas that just really set that time and place and everything. And it really is just the movie is so rich from like every corner.
Yeah. I think another thing I really enjoyed is that every character that's a woman was so well-rounded and had like so much to offer as a character instead of being like, oh, here's a love interest.
Yeah. Like, or just someone to be protected or whatever. Yeah, there's so many good characters. Like, it's really, even just calling out Michael B. Jordan does a disservice to, like, all the other mm-hmm. people in the movie. But you love when you have a movie like this that is just such a good film, and then they creep in the horror elements.
Oh, my God. And the horror is scary. Like, it's actually so scary. It's so good.
I'll give him a lot of credit considering he's never done horror before. Mm-hmm. Even in the beginning, when there isn't really much horror going on, it's like the way that it's edited, where they insert like jump scares at random points and stuff, just to kind of keep you on your toes. Mm-hmm. Like, even that, it's like it's almost setting the audience up for like where it's going. Just love that. Like, he nailed the genre completely. Yeah. And without saying too much about, you know, where it goes, when they do fully go into the horror and introduce the vampires and everything, that stuff is also just handled in a way that's just like, it's super compelling. It ties into the themes of everything.
Yeah, they do a really good job of capturing like the main essence of what a vampire is, but it takes it in like a new direction, which is really cool.
Very cool. And they find a way to like tie it into everything culturally too. Mm-hmm. And it's also important to note, like, the movie, it plays a lot with music. Like, that is so central to this. And it's funny because I remember it, like, I love Black Panther. And there's a scene in that movie where they have, like, it's really tied to the music. It has, like, this really interesting soundtrack. It's like, that was the scene that stood out to me so much. And it's like, you can see he understands this stuff, you know, and the way that he respects music in these movies.
Yeah, I still listen to Black Panther soundtrack because it's like so well, like, intertwined with the movie, gives it so much more emotion. And I will definitely be listening to the soundtrack of this movie because it's so good.
Yeah, that's a huge part. And just specifically the blues from that era plays a big role in the story, which is something we'll get into when we get spoilers. But for as far as content goes, I don't think there's anything, like, aside from, you know, there is a lot going on with, you know, the racial injustices of that time. I think, like, even though it's very heavy.
I feel like they touch on a lot of different aspects of that, like, of what racial injustice looked like in the 1930s at this particular period. But they touch on so many different aspects and how it affects so many of the characters in this film. So you really see, like, it's not all about one particular part. It's very, like, dimensional.
And multifaceted.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I could not think of a word.
It's very heavy, like, but it doesn't, it's not showing things. Like, the gore and the violence comes from the more horror side of things. You know, you're not seeing that in the racial context. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, instances are being described graphically by the characters, but they're not showing it.
Yeah, and even the violence, I mean, it's not super over the top with it. I didn't feel like, it's a lot of blood, but not a lot of gore.
See, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but, like, the blood doesn't look realistic. Like, it's...
it's very stylish.
It's stylized.
Yeah. But I don't know, I don't have anything else except that, yeah, this was absolutely exceptional. I think it's worth seeing in theaters. Just a cool-ass new vampire movie from an unlikely director, which is fantastic. Did you have anything else?
Not that's not a spoiler.
Then let's get to spoilers. So yeah, so much going on in this movie. I actually can't wait to listen to people smarter than me talk about it and break down a lot of the themes and everything, because as far as I could tell, the main thing seemed to be about the different ways of kind of escaping through just seeking power or pursuing, you know, art and culture.
Yeah.
You know, Smoke and Stack, they wind up leaving this plantation to go up to Chicago to pursue their dreams to achieve power and wealth. And they make it clear that, like, segregation, it still exists there, even if it's not, like, as integrated into the law, you know?
Yeah, it seems that there are some characters that are describing it as being it's progressive, but it's not as progressive as everyone's making. It's not this fantasy that unfortunately, it does seem like there's word of mouth that goes around that is the dream and the fantasy. Smoke and Stack come back and they're like, it's not.
Yeah. I guess their way of escaping at first is to go into the military, because it becomes clear that they fought in World War I together And then I guess they use that to get into this gang stuff in Chicago. Like they mentioned working for Al Capone. Mm-hmm. Like I think someone says something about that.
Yeah.
And it seems like what brings them back to Mississippi is that they rob these people and like set them against each other. And they're trying to set up their own black run business here. A juke joint, mm-hmm. which I guess is like a bar or club. But this is really like juxtaposed with their cousin Sammy, who they bring on because he's a musician. And that's like his big dream. That's his way of like trying to escape from all this. And that music, that winds up being so central to the movie.
Yeah, the music is like a catalyst, I think, in the story.
Yeah, and I mean, that scene, I think the scene at the bar when he's playing, like anyone listening knows what I'm talking about. That is like the scene in this movie, I feel like.
That scene, it like gives me chills thinking about it because it was so well done. It was literally the perfect way to convey the message. It is really beautiful. And there is definitely, I think, a universe where this wouldn't work, like maybe with some weird direction or whatever. But like everything fell into place, I think, for this scene because it's like so magical.
It's exceptional. Like the idea of having that much musical talent that you're like calling on the spirits from the past and the future. And seeing like the progression of blues through, you know, different decades.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what art is, though. I mean, art itself is always like learning and evolving. And I don't want to go off on a tangent, but that's why I feel like I've recently been more interested in learning about art history in a different way than I did when I was in college.
Yeah.
Like wanting to refresh that. And it's just so important to like study that stuff.
It's definitely important. But that scene's just super powerful. And I like how they blend in like different cultures too, because they're also the Chinese Americans they're working with and you see their history and culture. It's just, very cool scene.
Mm-hmm.
Movie definitely feels like it has a lot to say. There's like a lot of different reads that you can make on all this. I did think it's interesting when the vampires finally do show up and they're like summoned by the music, just like all these other spirits, which is so cool. But it becomes this, there's like this split where they're offering gold to come in there and basically turn these people into vampires to have this like certain type of community, you know, where you can live forever and don't have to deal with pain. And then you have Sammy kind of choosing between that and pursuing the cultural side of music. It's like the battle between, you know, as an artist pursuing wealth and fame and power or sticking to supporting the culture and tradition.
Yeah.
And I think the movie's definitely saying a lot about that kind of split. So it is like it winds up being extra tragic when you see how one by one, everyone's kind of getting converted. Like that big scene of them all dancing outside. Yeah. It's like the whole community has just been lost. And every time one of the lead characters is converted, like there's something tragic about that too. Like this certain kind of loss. And you can see how it completely destroys an entire community of people. I think this is like, it's a very interesting way of telling that story and showing that in a horror context, which is the best way, by the way.
I mean, what is more horrifying than our history?
It's true.
Yeah.
But I do like, it leads to a cathartic kind of ending, though, because it's the fact that he is able to escape from that and pursue his dreams in Chicago, become like this very famous blues musician.
And the club is like, it's called like Pearline or something.
Oh, yeah. I think I missed that. You love having the cathartic endings in these kind of movies, you know, when they're dealing with the heavy subject matter. We've talked about that before. Kind of prefer this kind of ending. Yeah. And I think it's like, it's very optimistic about where the culture is going.
And I think it was really nice that when Mary and Smoke show up. Is it Mary and Smoke? No, Stack. When Stack and Mary come back to the club and he's like super old and they're still the same age.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was nice that instead of this like cat and mouse kind of thing, that it was more like them coming together.
Yeah, and it just winds up being like an actual check-in.
Yeah.
You know? That's another part of like, it's a very well done ending.
Yeah.
I think it just, it summarizes the themes and everything in this really good way that feels really nice.
I also love their little like 80s 80s, 90s clothes.
Oh, yeah. That they were, I think, the theater started laughing when I saw him. Because, his drip was fucking immaculate.
Yes. I think also that ending is a good commentary on just how not far along ago that was.
Yeah. And that's the thing. There was this this very kind of nostalgic feeling to when he mentions that, like, that night at the club up until sundown, that was like the best night of his life. And they all agree with that. Mm-hmm. It's a real turning point culturally for a lot of these characters. And I think that just that ties back into what I was saying about the themes. Like, it just handles all that stuff so well. And so the movie, even though it is like it's full of all this action, there's also, we didn't even mention, part of the cathartic ending is when the KKK guys show up at the bar, and it feels almost unnecessary, but it's like, are you kidding me? Like, this is what we're here for. This is what I want to see. And he just guns down all of them. Yeah. Like that too. Like, after all the horror that just happened, when you have all that, it's like, it's just a good fucking movie. Yeah. You know?
I also really loved the character Annie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The way that she used hoodoo to protect him, and it, like, it worked.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool, because she gives him the mojo bag and it works.
Until he takes it off.
Well, yeah. Well, I think he wanted to be with Annie and the baby.
Yeah. And that was the other thing that, like, just felt very optimistic, is that idea of, you know, we'll meet up in the next life. It's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. We're like all over the place.
Well, there's a lot of good parts of the movie. It's hard to pin it all down because, I mean, the vampire kill was fucking cool too.
Yeah, the way they really do the horror. Let's talk about that. So, like, I thought it was cool right away when they set up that, yeah, these are the type of vampires you have to, like, invite in. Like, they're very much like traditional vampires.
I love the way that they introduced that because,
yeah,
it was such a good, like, subtle tell. I mean, subtle or unsubtle, depending on if you're...
It plays in the movie a lot later.
Yeah. And I think that that was really cool.
Well, it's cool because it's like he is introduced because he is running to this house as the sun's rising. And he's being pursued by Native American vampire hunters, mm-hmm. which is just cool as fuck.
Yeah, it is. I want to see that movie, too.
But it's like right away, it's cool because it feels like they're using like free run logic mm-hmm. for the vampires, which you can now understand that they'll kind of just say whatever in order to get what they want.
Yeah.
So it's the way he shows up and is telling them this sob story to be invited in. And it feels like very fake. And he like changes the story, you know, to try and. Yeah. But well, hey, it works.
I mean, I guess the way that they also set up how this, like, one central vampire absorbs, like, everyone.
Yeah,
like,
their consciousness and everything. Yeah. Memories.
The whole movie is just so well written because it's, like, all of these concepts were provided in such an easy way to understand, but in also a way that you would want to discover more about it.
Yeah.
But and none of it's overdone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying is, like, the context, not just historically, but even when it comes to, like, the vampire lore and stuff, it's like they really don't try to just over explain everything. Very, like, much show don't tell.
Also, like, when Annie threw the jar, what looked like a jar of water onto the vampire, they're like, well, what is that? It's like, obviously it's pickled garlic. Like, and she's like, you know, she says it's pickled garlic. But I just thought that it was so detailed. Like, you could catch that because there's foreshadowing in the beginning of them, like, bringing in all of these ingredients. And there's a reason for that garlic to be there, you know, like
the Chekhov's garlic.
Chekhov's garlic. Yeah.
But all of that, like, the way it sets it up for who was the first one? Oh, it was Mary. They, like, inadvertently invite Mary in. And it's like they set up the dialogue in this really deliberate way because you don't know for sure that she's a vampire yet.
Yeah.
But the way the dialogue is set up, it feels like she's trying to get them to invite her in. Mm-hmm. And then that finally comes back later with Cornbread. That's when there's like the whole confrontation. And that stuff, it's like so cool and unnerving. I just love all those little details.
Yeah, I thought Cornbread was so funny.
He's a great character.
And so was Delta Slim. I feel like our theater loved Delta Slim. Oh, it's so funny. I know.
That's what I'm saying. I think, like, the movie has so many rich characters that, like, all of them, they're all like very unique, but they're all so well developed.
Yeah.
But yeah, and like the way the vampires are depicted with the like glowing eyes in the dark and stuff, like, that stuff just looks really sinister and cool.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the glowing eyes thing. I think that's cool.
But when they have when he's singing like the old Irish folk songs and while everyone's dancing around and stuff, like all that, that's what I'm saying. Like culturally, it tackles so many different things, and it feels so rich and does it all so well.
Yeah, I also feel like the vampires also had this like zombie herd mentality to it too, which was really cool. So I think seeing like a huge group of vampires act almost like zombies was really interesting too.
It was a very, very cool movie. I would be really surprised if this is not on our top 10 this year.
Oh, yeah. I already know this is already one of my favorite movies.
I think we established this past weekend that Sinners and Companion are probably going to be on the top 10.
Yeah. This has been a very good weekend for us. Yeah.
<That's true. laughs> But I don't got anything else. What about you?
No.
Go to ghostbeast.com for all our links. You can also search for Ghost Beast Pod, and you can follow Ghost Beast on Letterboxd, where we rank everything we cover. I think I got a good spot. I'm putting it above The Vordalak and below In a Violent Nature.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's really up there.
Yeah.
Number 14 on our list. This could wind up being number one for this year. We'll see.
Maybe. I don't know.
You can contact us podcast@ghostbeast.com. What are your other favorite movies directed by a non-horror director? Follow us on YouTube and TikTok. Like, comment, subscribe.
Please leave a review.
Sure.
It helps.
All right, bye.